1:43 on the clock. First and 10, Pittsburgh, down by a point. Landry Jones back to throw from his five over the middle.
Pick it.
Perfect. Yeah. Intercepts it. Vontaze Burfict comes away with a football. The Bengals have the ball with 1 minute and 36 seconds to go.
Yeah.
Vontaze Burfict sprinting toward the locker room.
He's going to the locker room with
the
football.
He has run inside the locker room, which makes no sense. He'd better come back out before there's a penalty flag.
David. Football. Football David.
The Dave Dameshek Football Program. Available on Apple Podcasts and at NFL.com/DDFP. Now here's your host, Dave Dameshek.
Yes, there he goes. Vontaze Burfict into the bowels of the Bengals Stadium. He can stay there for the first month of the season, as it turns out. Hi and hello, and welcome to the Dave Dameshek Football Program. I hope all's well wherever you are here in Studio 66. We're racked with nerves because soon to come through the door here, Willie McGinnis, who has emerged as a real star here over the last 3 or 4 months. But then again, we haven't really talked to him in the last 6-8 weeks. So we're excited to get with the Browns legend in just a little bit. And also joining him, Sean O'Hara. He toiled for the Cleveland Browns and for the New York Football Giants. This has to excite one Eddie Spaghetti, eh?
I am very excited to hear what Sean has to say. Hope we have a couple good topics here. Hopefully we follow the rundown and we'll see what happens.
Yes, we will see what I don't know what you've scratched out. I assume some hot current football news. We'll get these guys to react to it. I would rather react to or hear tales from their own playing days and see how they then regard some of these stories in the draft and free agency period in which we currently sit. We'll tap into some stuff. I suspect we'll have fun with them. We'll see, though, if they can rise to the occasion and outdo or even keep pace with James Jones and Reggie Wayne, who joined us earlier in the week. I encourage you, nay. I positively demand you go back and listen to that one. It was a gem. It was a lot of fun, but then it got uncomfortable. MVP, did you think it was uncomfortable?
Very uncomfortable.
Yeah, James Jones. I said some things to him about how I thought Aaron Rodgers, over the course of his career, his pass catchers weren't as good as, like, Peyton Manning's or whatever. And James Jones, it seemed like he took that.
Yeah, that was weird.
In a weird way. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Anywho, so go back and listen to that. Also look at Facebook and Twitter and all that stuff with me because I'm putting up little video segments. And also, you can always track down our video segments at NFL.com/DDFP. And before the fellas get in here, very quickly, I'm excited because the NBA and NHL playoffs are underway. It makes me think maybe we should do something. Something I started doing about like 11 years ago at ESPN, and I think they still do it somewhere there on like their .com or somewhere, is they power rank the not just for one sport but for all of sports. Spaghetti, in this age, we saw Sidney Crosby in Game 1 against the rival Philadelphia Flyers put up the hat trick, two spectacular goals there that really it's not hyperbole to say he's the only guy in the NHL who could score both those goals in one game. Who, though, right now, if we power ranked, who is the biggest how should we even call it, the greatest player in this week, in this sports week, how would they rank out? Would it go Crosby? What about Ohtani of the Angels?
I that would be my pick just because, I mean, he's doing something we haven't seen since, like, the Babe Ruth era of baseball where you're pitching, you know, once every 5 days, and he's playing DH every
game. What's wrong with everybody? This is what I talk about when I say 21st century is just filled with vapid cynicism for no good reason. What is the isn't this a discussion that no matter what your age you've talked about, wouldn't it be cool if a pitcher were so great a hitter that they just had to put him in the lineup in his off days and vice versa, he's such a good pitcher that you have to start him some of the time. And now it's here, and the guy is dominating, and it feels like the opinion of most people is like, let's see if he can keep doing it into June. Like, what?
Right, yeah, his pitching's been phenomenal. Like, oh, well, the hitters will figure him out soon enough. Like, I know, I'm with you on that. I mean, it happened a few times. CeCe did it with the Brewers a bit. Dontrell Willis, Mike Hampton, name a few pitchers.
Wow, look at the Mike Hampton pool there.
Yeah,
good for you, Spaghetti.
To come in and pitch hit. But, I mean, what he's doing is it's incredible. I'm actually excited that he plays in Los Angeles or Anaheim.
MVP remembers that a couple of Bucco pitchers, Don Robinson and Rick Rodin, were no slouches with the stick either, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yep, see, she knows. She knew it.
Yep.
Also, well, who else? Oh, and LeBron. Is he going to win the MVP? He's the MVP in the NBA this year,
Russell Westbrook.
Westbrook with the triple-double.
Yeah, only player in NBA history to have a triple-double in two seasons.
So. Yeah, interesting. So that so would it go Russell, then LeBron?
I would
fictional
still,
power rankings
I would still put LeBron. No knock on Russ, but I'd put LeBron. LeBron's 33 years old and is like leading the league and everything. The guy is incredible.
All right, listen, now we've talked about, I think we've satisfactorily discussed things that are going on in other sports. Now it's time for a hardcore deep dive into gridiron, pigskin, pro football. Get in here, McGinnis and O'Hara.
You listen to Dave Damashek.
All right, let's roll it then. Let's start the show with two of my very favorites to join us here in Studio 66 any given time. And a guy who's really emerged over the last few months here with the Czech Republic as one of their favorites, even though he wore the flying Elvis on the side of his head for way too long. Here he is, everybody, the fourth overall pick from the 94 draft or 96?
Why do we have to bring up old dates and go back to the
past? Because I like to do it.
94.
Well, it is throwback Thursday.
Here
it is throwback.
Is.
Right.
I posted a picture,
throwback
too.
Throwback Thursday.
If you guys have my Instagram account, you'll see the picture I posted with my rookie season with Andre Tippett kind of handing over the throne and Chris Slade, who played on the right side of me, who kind of took me under his wing.
What an offense that you think I don't know who David Givens is. Just before we started, that you don't – I know who
Slade –
Well,
you're talking Hall of Fame, guys.
And I know who Tippett is. Tippett – do you know Tippett? No, what kind of karate does he practice?
I could tell you he studied over in Japan. It wasn't here.
Mm-hmm. Kenpo?
And
Taekwondo.
No, I don't know.
Yeah, well, I'm telling
you. He knows a lot.
You.
He knows the swords and everything. Like, he's like a 50-degree black belt. Like, he's on a whole nother level. He knows the weapons and everything. He's like
– It's weird.
He's pretty dangerous.
Andre Tippett's a little forgotten, you know?
How?
Because it – Just because I think Lawrence Taylor, people who weren't alive or watching football in that era, sort of hold up number 56 of the Giants as the one. But, I mean, he may be ushered in an age of those OLBs being dominant pass rushers. But between Derek Thomas
and run stopper.
He was awesome.
He was a beast.
Wilbur Marshall.
You cannot put your hands on him.
You guys had a scary defense. I used to play Madden with you guys.
Oh, you did?
I used to play. Thanks, yeah, I used to play the video game with you. But like, is there a better name than Chris Slade and William McGinnis, like defensive guys? Like Chris Slade.
Slade, the that, Blade that, Runner.
That is
called
like,
him Blade Runner.
I'm sure you have like a list of all-time best football names, but
I did.
Chris
well,
Slade would definitely be on that list.
Dick Butkus and DeBrickashaw Ferguson. And, you know, that's pretty much those are the two best.
Like Paul Warlor.
But
Warlor, the linebacker. Like, just, I mean, there's just, I love looking at him.
Let's say hello to him. Here he is, the Trojans and Cleveland Browns legend. Here he is, Willie McGinnis.
He loves doing that. That's cool.
There he is, and another Cleveland Brown great seated to my immediate left.
Yeah, we
also
got the dog pound. We've got the dog pound in here.
He won a couple of
not
rings.
The original Frank Minifield and Hanford Dixon. I know you know those guys, but
that was my favorite. You know, when I was growing up watching football, even though I loved the Pittsburgh Steelers,
I was about to say, how was that your favorite?
Because I thought they were cool. That was the height of the dog pound. Yeah, Frank Minifield and
they were legendary. And Bernie Kosar was lighting up. He had his own song, Bernie, Bernie, oh, baby.
Bernie was a backup for like 15 years.
Yeah.
I don't remember. I don't,
you remember,
don't remember the song? No.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Bernie was the man.
Oh, I remember watching Bernie, number 20, or number 19.
Ernest Biner, Kevin
at the
Mack,
U.
Tim Manoa, the fullback.
That's right. Those Browns.
Webster Slaughter. How about a great, speaking of great football names, Webster Slaughter.
You got it.
I mean, that doesn't.
Right.
Never been a Super
Kevin
Bowl
Mack
appearance.
For a running back.
Mack truck.
You just want to do this for the next 20 minutes?
Brian
we can
Brennan,
do it.
Brian
you
Brennan?
That's Eric, not a good
Eric Metcalf?
I was going to say Metcalf
was the other
like
one. Reggie
was
Newhouse?
The beast.
Reggie Langhorne.
Why do you know so much
Reggie
about
Langhorne.
That Browns team?
I lived in Medina, Ohio for 4 years.
Is that true?
Before I moved to Jersey. So
you were reared as a Browns fan?
No, I was born in Chicago, so I was a Bears fan growing up.
And what era? So you're not – old enough to remember Sweetness in his early days.
He's an 80s baby, right?
My very first football card, I was number 34 in honor of Walter Payton. I was running back. I was a fullback.
Yeah,
what?
Okay, fullback.
They said, "Who are you? Who's your favorite players?" I said, Walter Payton and Mike Singletary. That's my very first football card. I got a button in fifth grade in Pop Warner, you know, that mom used to wear. Mm-hmm. And I was number 34.
It's like 80 what?
I was fifth grade, so –
Mm. That was before the championship.
Yeah, I was 87. It was like
probably, right after.
Yeah, 87. But I would go whenever we would visit my relatives. You know, that's what we'd watch: Notre Dame football on Saturday and the Bears.
Do you remember when
I had a poster
Jim McMahon
of the 85 Bears defense on my wall? Otis Wilson, Wilbur Marshall, the Fridge. You know, Richard Dent. Getting to meet and hang out and have a cigar with Richard Dent was one of my all-time
favorites. Oh, I bet. You know,
Dan Hampton. I mean, those guys.
I upset Chicago Bears fans all the time by saying, because I believe this in my soul, I think the 85 Bears would have lost to Dan Marino's Dolphins if the Dolphins had vanquished the Patriots in the AFC title game. They overlooked them. It rained. They didn't get there.
Marino, he might not have finished the game.
Yeah, but
I mean, those guys
Marino whipped them in the Orange Bowl a month prior. You know, yeah. The one great QB they played outside of Joe Montana that year was Marino, and Marino had his way with them that night on Monday Night Football. Why wouldn't it have happened on the fast track in the Superdome? Hey, let's say hello to another guy. Here he is, everybody. How many rings do you have on your fingers?
Another guy. I got one right now, my wedding band. That's
you know what I'm getting.
That was the hardest one to earn.
Don't be difficult.
One ring, Super Bowl 42.
It wasn't the hardest one there.
It sure was, yeah.
You had to vanquish Brady. And
I had to dupe her. I had to dupe her.
Yeah, we had – oh, well, here they are. And oh, so it's Sean O'Hara. That's who I was.
Oh, that's my name.
That's who I was leading.
I thought I was just a guy.
The Scarlet Knight. I was saying another guy from the Cleveland Browns.
Another Browns legend. Yes.
That's right.
We didn't – you know, we didn't overlap, but we share a lot of –
Willie came in here all fired up right out of the gate because I said, hey, you two, O'Hara and McGinnis, are going to have a lot to live up to after the heat that consumed Studio 66.
The Irish pub of McGinnis and O'Hara. I mean, I wouldn't want to follow us.
Your deeds are well known. You don't have to justify yourself to me. I know what you're capable
about him
of.
Pretty soon. You'll see his tricks of the trade.
I want you to know James Jones and Reggie Wayne paid us a visit on our previous DDFP, and I mentioned to James Jones, and I think he took it the wrong way. I said, I think Aaron Rodgers has had the worst collection of pass catchers for any high-end Hall of Fame quarterback ever, and James Jones, that didn't sit well with him for some reason. How say you?
Weird.
It is weird.
It's a slap in the face, pretty much. Yeah. I think they
should
have.
Should he have been offended?
It's like saying the NFL Network doesn't have any good podcast hosts.
Right.
No, I just said he's – listen, I mean,
Matt Money Smith's pretty good. Daniel Jeremiah and, you know, and Bucky.
Now I know you're lying.
Yeah, those guys.
Hold Jeremiah. On.
You know what was awesome, actually, when Nate and Mike Robb did the –
oh, yeah. They had
one. That was
that's a pretty hot duel.
That was dominating the airwaves.
You remember that? You remember all two shows that they did?
It was R&B.
So you do have a good memory.
But I do agree.
You agree with me?
No.
Oh.
I agree that with Sean, of course not you, with Sean, that Jennings, Jordy Nelson, Driver, Devontae, Adams.
Okay. Who's the best one of that group? Who's the best one of that group?
Yeah,
you saying these are average, like whatever guys?
No, don't say I
these
said
are
that.
some of the best receivers in the league.
What say you,
James Jones, who was there, and they had some of the best.
The
receivers.
Hoodie.
Oh, don't forget the tight ends.
Yeah,
don't forget the tight end.
I know
portion.
Them all right, I remember.
I'm just
them
saying,
all.
Like you can't say that because the guys.
I did say it, and I say it again.
The guys are not in the Hall of Fame yet, or supposed to be Hall
None
of Famers.
None of those guys that you just listed off are wind up with a gold jacket.
It doesn't matter. They're still some of the best receivers. Everybody can't go in the Hall of Fame.
I don't know what standard that is. I mean,
does that make you a good receiver because you don't go to the Hall of Fame?
It means you're not as good as other receivers who do go to the Hall of Fame.
There's only so many spots for the Hall of Fame. All great receivers.
Why are you being difficult, Willie? I mean, I know I'm right about this.
I think he's been blessed with a good core of receivers over his career.
Good ones.
And he's always had a lot of good ones,
which means
you spread the ball around.
Who's had better, Aaron Rodgers or Tom Brady?
It's not even close.
Tom Brady had first ballot Hall of Famer Randy Moss and the greatest tight end of all time, Rob Gronkowski.
What Super Bowl did they win with Randy Moss?
That's not the discussion.
Aaron Rodgers won a Super Bowl with those receivers. That's why we're having that discussion.
He
won a Super Bowl with those receivers. And guess who else
had
those
receivers?
That's why
he's great.
Brett Favre had half of those receivers.
That's right. He also suffered from less than dominant, you know.
They're also different receivers, though. Like, what slot receiver? We just mentioned Randall Cobb, but Aaron Rodgers, what slot receivers did he have? They're different. They're different receivers. Brady's always had, I mean, his slot receivers, well, yeah. Wes Welker, Julian Edelman. You look at Amendola.
I don't know if
different
Edelman.
Different types of receivers. So you,
tell me this. Is Edelman a star anywhere he goes? Probably not.
With
that's
Wes?
A break. Wes,
if,
yes.
If Wes doesn't go to Peyton.
Right, well, he did.
Is he a star? Was he a star the 3 years prior to going to Brady?
No, I that's what
no.
I that's
so
what
systems make certain players too, right? No, and I'm, it's not a knock on him, but I think for him, he found a particular spot position. They utilized it extremely well. He found his niche and he became one of the best receivers. If he would have went to Breeze or like he went to Peyton or maybe Ben, if he didn't go to certain quarterbacks to put him in the exact same system, which Denver did, is he the same receiver? In my opinion, no.
I'm just looking at your
I'm fascinated you by – I don't know how to ask this question. This is too big a question to ask you
I
guys.
I thought we were going to talk about this stuff.
Like, we'll talk about what
got,
I decide.
You got a couple of linemen that actually did work on Sunday.
I know. We talked
and
to pretty boy
we're talking
receivers.
About divas. Like, you're letting Reggie Wayne and James Jones commandeer this –
I don't
this,
want
this
that.
Segment.
I don't
no.
want that for the three
like,
of us.
We talk about the divas enough. I mean, is anybody else sick and tired of talking about Odell Beckham and Dez and all these receivers? Like, we're talking
well,
about
wait a second. Now you like, bring up an issue.
You got some,
guys
got some real men in here. Let's talk some real stuff.
I want to ask one thing food. Since somebody who is – you listen, you love your stories about the French fries on the eve of the big games with Eli and
you
everything.
You love that story.
I do love it. Yeah, and I like when we you ate a – I also like when you consumed a wiener in stall number three at halftime of an NFL game. Do you
that
know
just
that,
didn't
Willie?
Come out right.
This show just took a hard left.
Willie, do you know that about your friend O'Hara?
I don't want to know. I don't want to know anything know. About him consuming.
Now, number
wiener
one.
At
number one.
Time.
Who says wiener? No, who says wiener?
I will. What? What's, which is the misdemeanor and which is the football felony?
Did you just watch something about Mary?
You're a pro football player. Except, you're in the.
Can
you're
I
in
tell
the. In the dirty stall.
Have you seen my baseball?
I got a teammate.
Yeah, we call it a wiener.
We used to tease all the time because I caught him eating pizza in the bathroom stall while he was taking a dump. It's the nastiest thing ever.
You can't.
It's the nastiest thing ever.
You can't be. You can't be. Doing work
name,
and eating work.
Roman could, Pfeiffer.
Yeah.
But.
So just to give you the cliff notes. It was
oh,
my, it was
no.
My, it was my rookie year in Cleveland. and I wasn't playing. I was like, I was dressing, but I wasn't even playing. I was
right.
like the seventh man. And, you know, I would get hungry. So at halftime, you come in and you see all the inactive guys. They're over there stuffing their face with the hot dogs.
You don't
want
to get in trouble.
So I was like, man, I'm starving. Like, you know, we didn't have all the Gatorade bars and all the stuff they do now. So I would have the equipment guy go into the bathroom and I would hang out in the stall. I wasn't
meet
doing
me
any,
in stall.
I wasn't doing any business
in the bathroom.
But he would hand me one underneath it and I would just. And I would quick
okay,
eat a hot
that's
dog
different.
And sneak out. But
well, wait a second.
But
wait.
The best part is he gave me like a mustard pack one time. I spilled mustard on my jersey. So I came out of the stall and Chris Palmer was washing his hands. He had just got done. He looks over and I would come out and I got mustard all over my jersey. And he's looking at me, he's shaking his head. And I'm like, oh, I'm definitely getting cut tomorrow.
That's different. He so, wasn't actually using
yeah, but he's,
the
I
facilities.
Doing what hosts
the guy,
do. They leave
the guy
with,
I play
with
was actually using
true.
The facility.
He was sitting down.
Sitting down
and
using
eating the wiener.
Hot dog.
Pizza.
Hot dog. Can you stop saying that? That's just.
You're the one who did it.
It's
man.
Like clickbait.
Don't get mad at
that's
me.
That's clickbait right there, eating a wiener. See
what
how-
about your friend Eli? Eli now, what do you think he feels like? We're committed to you. Gettleman says, oh,
talking
yeah,
about
you're
Eli
our-
Apple?
Come on. Listen to me. Eli. Oh. Gettleman says, you're our guy, man. I'm sorry the way it went down at the end of last year. That doesn't happen again under my watch. You're the main man here with the New York Football Giants. Oh, yeah, we might also use the second overall pick on your successor. You think he doesn't care? That doesn't make any sense. If you're the Giants
yeah.
as constructed, why would you possibly wait – not waste, but why are you worried about – 2-3 years down the line when you're in win now mode. If you're starting Eli Manning, you by definition are trying to win right now. You're not looking down the line. So why would you then take Saquon Barkley, take Quentin Nelson, somebody that will help Eli win games in 2018? Yes.
So what was your question?
I'm saying, how does Eli feel?
How does Eli feel? Or are you asking me about the Giants?
I'm asking you, does it?
What should they do?
However you want to answer it.
Well,
we're just talking you.
Let's start off with if I'm Eli. And you have to say Eli Manning now.
All right.
Two
Eli
Eli's
Manning,
on the team.
Right.
There's a good apple and a bad apple.
Do you know that there have been four men in the history of pro football named Eli, and three of them gathered on the same field, Heinz Field, 2 years ago. Eli Apple, Eli Rogers, and Eli Manning. Put that in your pipe and smoke it.
Hmm. Okay. You are full of information.
Or put in your wiener bun and chew on it. Either way.
I think the one thing that people forget about, like what's great about the game, is the opportunity to compete. And that's why Eli's still playing the game. That's why Brady's still playing the game. I'll tell you right now, I spent a bunch of time with Eli over the last couple months. The last thing he's worried about is having to compete. So he doesn't care. I mean.
But doesn't he want to compete with the best possible roster?
He wants to go out and win football games. So what I'm saying is he's not worried about competing for his job or competing if they draft somebody.
But that happens every single year. They draft players in all of our positions to probably
– Patriots have drafted quarterbacks.
Right, to take your job. They drafted guys and they bought free agents in my position when I was there. All that should do is just motivate you and keep you going, but it happens every single
year. That would hurt my feelings.
The one thing that Eli doesn't want to do, Brady doesn't want to do, they don't want to be involved in, hey, look, here's who I think you guys should take it. Like that, they're staying in their lane. They've got enough stuff
you
to work.
You think so? I don't buy that. Maybe Eli's not that way.
You want to bring Eli or Brady in and say, let's help me draft a guy that's going to take your spot.
I don't know whether or not the Colts or the Broncos wanted that, but do you think Peyton Manning didn't weigh in? Like, hey, this guy would really be good.
Do you think Brady didn't want to keep Wes Welker?
So if
he did have a say in it, you think he would let Wes
I also
walk
think
out
that Drew Brees had something to do with Jimmy Graham departing New Orleans, no matter what he says. I think if you're the star of the team, they probably consult you. Hey, we're going
to – situation. I mean, he wanted to get paid like a receiver. He didn't want to block like he hasn't done since he's been in the league. There's a lot of things that factored into that.
Can I tell you something else, Sean?
Sure.
I'm going to tell you what I think happened up in Foxborough. I think that Tom Brady is now talking to anyone who will listen, like, hey, this Lamar Jackson's a beast, because he doesn't like the negative press he got for the insinuation that Jimmy Garoppolo had to get moved because Tom didn't want the talented youngster.
You really think Tom is spending energy? Do you think he's spending energy?
Like, I don't know.
Hey, I can either hang out with Giselle and we can watch a show, or you know what? I'm going to really think about how do I kind of get them turning over there, and how do I get
what do you mean? I mean, of course, Tom Brady.
That negative energy, you know,
then,
what that does?
Then why?
That ruins your avocado ice cream.
Do you actually think last year he was the league MVP? The year before he was up for MVP, won the Super Bowl MVP, right? Do you really think that he's worried about anybody coming in at the level he's playing to take his position?
No. No, I don't. In 28, Lamar Jackson? No, I think there's zero.
Well, I'm just
chance
saying, even before Jimmy Garoppolo, when he was there.
I don't know. I talked to people who thought that Garoppolo might actually challenge
even when
him.
Even when he was out for four games, when he came back and caught fire and won a Super Bowl and was the MVP, do you think he was worried that?
I don't know. I don't want
Jimmy G to play
can
well.
Can I tell you what I think my honest answer to that is? I think the one thing that elevates you guys, not just the superhuman physical gifts, but also you come to believe that over a decade or a decade and a half as you're growing up and you're being recruited and then you get drafted into the pros or you go into the pros.
Or undrafted.
You then feel very good about where you are. You know you're a dominant athlete. You believe that you belong. You believe that you're infallible on some level. And so your blind spot, you see it more in boxing than you do in football or any other sport, but the blind spot for professional athletes is, oh, you know what? I'm losing it. I know Tom Brady's not thinking to himself like, hey, when's it going to go for me already here? Like my
right.
Physical
everybody else
are gonna
says
be gone.
That. Oh, he thinks he's going to play. 40. Oh, he turned 40. He's going to have a bad year. MVP. He's 40.
Tom has always done a great job of creating fuel.
Right.
Like he creates that fire. And that's why he likes Lamar Jackson. Why is he rooting for him? Because he was Lamar Jackson. Lamar is probably going to be the sixth quarterback taken in this draft. Guess what? The Brady six, right? So Brady, he was that guy that
I agree
was
about the guys
that
figure
mindset
out.
And that fuel is what has driven Brady to be.
Well, I've laughed about it with Willie that it's funny that in 25 years no professional team has won a championship without declaring as soon as it's over. No one outside this locker room believed in us. Like, well, some people believed in you guys, you know, but you have a knack for putting a chip on their shoulder.
I think
Jordan Brady and so on. The entire Seahawks.
When you have a lot of success, or continued consistent success, I think, and we kind of fell into this, you got to find different ways to motivate yourself so you don't become complacent. When we start feeling good about ourselves, we didn't make the playoffs the next year after the first Super Bowl. You know, it was terrible. It was we felt embarrassed. Like, we didn't know what to do. It was like, we never want to feel this again. So I think you got to constantly find, no matter if you're 18-0 or you're 17 or you got the best team or you're coming off a couple Super Bowls, you got to reinvent yourself. You got to find different ways to motivate yourself going in. I just think all competitors do that. I think Floyd Mayweather does that. He hasn't lost a fight. He knows he can go in and outbeat or outbox anybody, but going in, what's my motivation going in now? What do I have to do? What is this guy going to say? What are the critics saying? Whatever it is, you gather all that, you put it in a big pile, and that's your fuel. And you just go and you continue to do what you do.
I completely believe that, although, I mean, like I say, you know, in black and white, it's pretty laughable because I specifically remember Deion Branch after the victory over the Eagles in the Super Bowl saying, no one outside this locker room believed in us. Like, all right, man, I think some people believe
that
the New England Patriots dynasty might win the Super Bowl.
Well, you know why? A lot of people didn't. Like, he was there with the Rams, you know, so he understood that. I think he was there. Was Deion Branch on that team? I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Patton.
Oh,
with Givens.
Oh, yeah, no, he wasn't
there. No, he wasn't there yet, but there's like articles we used to get hung up in our lockers and people say different things and we didn't hear everything else. We just heard what was shoved in our face and it was purposely done.
Look who picked you guys to win the Super Bowl.
Right.
Nobody.
It was purposely done.
Yeah.
But by the way, now, Sean, to answer your question from 11 minutes ago.
By the way, nobody picked us to beat the Patriots.
Do I think
well,
the
undefeated.
Only people that believe that we could beat the 18-0 Patriots?
And guess who else took that identity this year? Philly. Yeah. They had dog masks.
Underdogs.
A team that had the playoffs all come through Philadelphia, had the number one seed. I mean,
that's another syndrome that Willie and I have addressed.
By the way, I'd really love to know, are Browns fans upset about the fact that the Birds kind of really took the dog face by storm? Like everybody bought into the dog faces, but
sold
the dog
out.
Pound is like, really? Not you. You have Carson Wentz, who we passed up in the draft.
That.
You win a Super Bowl, and you're doing it with a dog mask. We're the dog pound. You guys are birds.
That's all we have is the dog pound, and you're taking that. Yeah you're right. Well, Willie and I talked about that. The syndrome that is very real, not just in football, but in all sports. You don't want the curse of Sposta. If you're supposed to win, that puts undue pressure on you. And those 18-0 or whatever they were, Patriots going in against your
Giants.
That's
why sports is great.
I know. They were supposed to win. But then again, that's also why I know underdog stories are fun and people love when a guy comes out of nowhere to do it. Timmy Smith in the Super Bowl with Doug Williams and those guys against the Broncos. What I admire more than that, though, is what Tom Brady did against the Seahawks in 49. He's down double digits to the generation's best defense.
Carved him up.
And he rallies them in the fourth quarter to win. That's nails. He's supposed to do it. Everybody in the stadium, including Belichick's like, hey, Tom, you got to do it, man. And Tom did it. I think that's the great.
What's funny is
when you can add to your legend like that.
They were supposed to lose that game. They were on the 1 yard line.
Right.
Yeah. Well,
they weren't supposed to win that one.
At that point, no.
So really, the Patriots won a Super Bowl they had no business winning, and then they lost one that they had no business.
But let me tell you something. To answer your question, your thing about Eli, like, do I really think Eli's sitting around worried about that? He's worried about having a nice life. Then why all the derogatory stuff about Josh Rosen reading books? I don't know if he's committed to football. He's in every waking moment in his life. He's not thinking about pigskin. I don't know if he's right for pro football.
Because he's reading books about Wall Street and how to become an investor this other stuff.
Come on, that's nonsense, right?
No, I'm just saying.
People try to talk themselves out of things.
Right, you guys don't actually care about a guy who has interests outside of football, right?
No, as long as he's not as long as it's not taken away from what we're doing here. Like, I don't want to walk in the locker room and see my quarterback
painting.
He's supposed to be watching film.
If he's not
in there on his off day as a quarterback, I don't want you. There are no off days.
We had guys. We had a certain guy in our locker room who had an opportunity to be our feature back. And he played a significant role in the first Super Bowl in 2001. He made a couple plays. But during the year or years after, he didn't last long there in that locker room. He was staying up till 4 or 5 in the morning in the studio because he wanted to be a rapper. He wanted to be a rapper. He wanted music. He loved music, and I got it. I got the whole thing. But you're not in the weight room. You're not watching film. You're not working on your craft. You're not doing all this. But you get home, and you're in the studio trying to rap till 4 or 5 in the morning. You got to get up and come to practice. Where's your priority? For me, the most important position on the field, which is quarterback, which teams are saying, the guys that we draft in this draft, these four, top five, whatever guys, we're going to build our future around these guys. If these guys are not 1,000% in on football, on giving their life away, because that's what you do at the quarterback position, and 1,000% committing to everything, all the nuances that go along with that, then, yeah, I do have a problem with that. I don't think you just have to be like, wake up, I love football. You walk around, I want to eat football. Like, I'm not saying that. But once you get in that position, like, that's pretty much your life. Mm. Like, that's
and
your life.
And I do sense, you know, it's and easy I, to and say, well, he's with Giselle and he's got that. But I feel like Brady
Tom
is that.
Time?
Guy. Yeah, I feel like Tom is that.
Right. He is that. Like, in his family sacrifice. All of our families sacrificed while we played. I know how he worked. I know how I worked. And I did above and beyond. Like, it was never enough. I was always trying to create something else to make me better or help me. And it takes away from your family, your kids, everything that you're doing. And if a guy already is – if there's already reservations about a guy from his coordinators, from his coaches, from people he's played for who are saying he doesn't love it that much, he doesn't put in enough work, the work ethic isn't there, you might have to push him here and there – that's vital information for me. If I'm going to put my franchise on this kid's shoulders for the next, hopefully, decade.
All right, but we can agree on this much, and that is interesting. The Browns do not have enough goodwill built up with their drafting, especially at quarterback.
It's a new Browns, It's a new Browns.
They should take two quarterbacks.
It can be unfair.
Take one and one and take one and four.
Hey, you know what? The Packers
fight it out.
Hey, we're going to – one of them is going to be good.
That would be crazy. It's a, like would be like a fantasy draft.
No, what would be crazy is having the chance to draft Carson Wentz and not take him.
Or Derek Carr.
Or Deshaun Watson.
Or Derek Carr.
Or Derek Carr or Goff. That would be crazy.
I don't know. Yeah, go ahead.
I mean, but when you hold those guys up, Derek Carr, I really did like coming out of school. But I think that Darnold and probably Rosen I like better than any – well, I did like Wentz a lot too, but he had the question coming out of the small school in North Dakota State and all that.
Well, does Josh Allen.
Well, that's what I was going to say. If you're the Cleveland Browns and you do things like you miss on Carson Wentz, you don't take him, you miss on Ben Roethlisberger throughout, you have Tim Couch and all these other random
look at the guys
bumps.
They took first round recently. Right. Manziel, Wheaton, those type of guys.
But that's the point. You can't
Brady
now.
Quinn.
You are not – whether it's fair or not to Dorsey and Hugh, you as an organization do not have enough goodwill built up to be able to roll the dice first overall on a QB. You've got to be able to say –
I have more respect for Dorsey. I think Dorsey – in his football acumen, I think he understands and he will get it right.
So you think this is a smokescreen?
I don't think it's a smokescreen. I just think I'm looking at what he's done so far, and I think what he's done, what he did in Kansas City, and I think he knows what he's doing. So you got to respect that. You got to let the football people do that. Like sometimes owners
and other people want to
pop in and intervene in certain things. But when you have guys that are respectable and that have a track record of doing certain things, you got to respect the process.
The Browns are in a great situation right now, though, because at 1-4, they're going to get two studs.
Right.
I mean,
they should.
But if they get a prospect,
even if you close your eyes
and don't trade back, don't trade back, don't do anything.
No, don't trade
back. Just stay
there,
right?
You're going to get Barkley and a quarterback. Worst case, you get Chubb and a quarterback.
Right, which is what I would do, and then take best available.
I wouldn't do
Chubb.
They just got Myles Garrett. I wouldn't do Chubb.
But then you put those two together and dominate for a long time.
You need offense. Yeah. You got to score points.
Well, they got offense.
The reason why the Browns have had good
defense. They bought an offense. You got Josh Gordon coming back. You signed Landry. You got Njoku, the receiver. You got
the tight end.
Yeah, you signed another tight end. You got two running backs, Duke Johnson, and you signed
Carlos
Hyde. You got weapons. You just need the guy to get the ball to the weapon.
And you know
and
what?
You need a tackle.
I say this, you know, we talk about these receivers, and that's where the conversation got off the rails with James Jones, because he declared that the best trio of wide receivers in 2018 would be the Cleveland Browns, and plus David Njoku, like Willie says. That sounds dangerous to me. The evidence is clear in the 21st century. You don't need to have a dominant number one wide receiver to win the Super Bowl. In fact, very few teams that have won the Super Bowl have a guy you would hold up as one of the three or five best pass catchers in the NFL. That's you don't need. What you do need, though, is to be able to dominate at the line of scrimmage.
Right.
I know it's unsexy, but it is true that when you guys, Willie, were winning your first three, it was all about that defense. And when you were doing it, you guys were keeping Eli clean on one side.
Their defense was tenacious.
You guys were just rotating that thing. It's the same thing that the Eagles did this year. And now they've beefed up that pass rush even more at the line of scrimmage. So don't you go Quentin Nelson. Given the evidence, it's a copycat league. Go Nelson and Chubb. Done. Now we got all the skill
Nelson
guys.
Nelson number one?
I don't know, however you want to do it, but whatever order you want to go in.
Wow. So what about Tyrod Taylor? What if he doesn't work out?
He's fine. I don't understand why NFL players.
Then
you got
to
so
wait another 4 to 5 years before the next group of quarterbacks come out like this. There's a long wait before you get another.
They can't not get a quarterback.
Right.
I want to hear something.
But I love Quentin Nelson. I've met the kid before. He's an awesome kid.
Because people.
He's a slam dunk.
You and I have talked about this, O'Hara. I love talking to you and Ross Tucker about that. I love the pretentious football fan who weighs in on how good an offensive lineman is coming out of school. Like, well, you don't know. I mean,
We know you don't know.
I know. But you know what? I don't feel bad about it because NFL cornerbacks and wide receivers don't know either.
Yeah. Can you back up? You weigh on Ross Tucker to tell you what's a good offensive lineman?
Yeah, that's right.
Oh.
Well, listen, Ted Williams couldn't define.
You don't like Ross?
No, I'm just saying, like.
I think he said he enjoys talking about good.
That's right.
I thought you were saying like you listen to a really good offensive lineman talk about.
But he's saying
the
only time he talks about offensive lineman is when he's talking to Ross Tucker or me.
I
don't know how to take that though.
I don't have Anthony Munoz's phone number.
See, that's what I'm saying. I sent something there, but.
No, listen. Okay. These guys can evaluate. They did it.
One did it.
Well, okay. O'Hara was better.
Ross and I,
we better figure this out.
I know Ross. I always give him a hard time. He's probably going to hit me up and talk trash.
A couple of undrafted guys. You know, he went to Princeton because he couldn't get into Rutgers. Russ was a scrapper, man. It's funny. I used to watch film on him.
He has great stories about doing stuff after the whistle.
He's hilarious.
Ross is an interesting guy.
Yeah, I love listening to him talk.
I mean, we really should try to get him
on
the
phone. We should get David Deal on the phone.
That's another one. Let's get them all in. Let me tell you something. But you can evaluate these guys, and everybody's swooning for Quentin Nelson as though they know one 300-pound guy from another guy. But you, with your expert eye, you look at him and say, no way this guy flames out.
No, he's a lock. You plug him in, he's starting week one, and he's going to be your starter at left guard, and he can move to right guard.
So why not do that?
He could have played tackle in college
if it wasn't
for
McGlinchey. If you're the Browns, take the sure thing and dominate, you know.
Well, they paid Joel Bitonio. They gave him a new contract, and they just paid Kevin Zeitler. So that's why you don't do it, just mathematically.
Makes sense.
The chance really to get a tackle is probably even more pressing for them than it is.
Next question. You played with the Giants, the Mara family, I don't know how you would describe them, old money, I guess, versus.
They're like royalty.
Yeah, they're pigskin royalty with the Rooneys that gang. Whereas Robert Kraft cuts an interesting figure to me. He's media savvy. He feels more like one of the newer owners.
I guarantee
he's been
this.
Around for quite
John
a while.
Mara has no idea who Meek Mill is.
That is an interesting move.
And he doesn't own any Air Force Ones.
You know why? Because Rick Ross performed at the Super Bowl party when they won. So Rick Ross brings Meek Mill, of course. And so they got it on social media. Meek Mill wants to try on the ring, and he's putting on a Super Bowl ring, but he's with Rick Ross. So that's how the relationship
works. I love it. Isn't
Rick in jail too?
No.
No?
Rick is out.
Oh, okay.
Rick
he's was out.
A,
he's
he,
out.
Rick was in the hospital for a minute.
What about
Bob's hanging out with some company?
Listen, man, he's a rock star. He's hanging out with everybody.
That
goes.
He's cool, man.
Yeah.
He's cool.
He's having a good time.
That leads me to this question. I don't think you necessarily need to take a back seat. If I were a billionaire and I owned a professional sports franchise, Jerry Jones is the guy who's probably or Mark Cuban, one or the other, gets the most sort of pushback on doing this. If I owned a team, I would certainly be in the war room on draft day saying, like, I want this guy. Wouldn't you? Do you resent the idea of an owner?
You could be in a war room. You don't necessarily have to say, I want this guy, because you don't as an owner.
I would
owner,
say, tell me why I'm wrong that
I'm
Sam
tell you,
Darnold's
because as
the
an
guy.
Owner, you don't do the research and you don't do the work. You rely on your scouts and your coaches and everybody else to do that. So when you're game planning and putting a system in place and all that, I don't think there's an owner, unless it's Jerry Jones, like you said, who's more hands-on. You're in there saying, hey, you know, we got these type of linemen. We got to run these zone type of reads because this fits their skill set and doing all that. You kind of backed off from that. Now, if somebody sends you a tweet, say, hey, come and get me, I'm going to change your franchise around, and you get, you know, a little whatever, and you itchy, and you push the button, that's a different story. But I'm saying typically owners don't
well,
do
we
that.
We just put out a new NFL on the very subject of Jerry Jones wanting Johnny Manziel at 16
Are
in the
true?
Draft.
Are you sure about that? Is that true? Was he just interested?
I don't know. Stephen Jones, apparently, per Stephen Jones, had to talk Jerry out of making that pick. Maybe it's true, but
I think Jerry's a little smarter than that. I think he may have showed a little interest.
So Robert Kraft never goes to Belichick.
He's in the meetings.
Like this guy.
Here's the thing. Most owners, I mean, it's all personality driven. But the reason why most owners don't do that is because then you don't have anybody to fire.
That's a good point.
What are you going to do? I mean, if you are the one making the call on all these draft picks and they suck, everybody's looking at you. So that's why you have
owners who are pretty bad to fire themselves.
It didn't work out so well. You're done. Get you.
But you got two titles, though. You're the owner and the GM.
Well, no, I'd be doing
– I mean, that's what I'm saying.
I would say make a compelling case why we shouldn't take this guy, and I'll listen to you,
you know what? But here's the flip side to that. A lot of people questioned Jerry Jones when he went out and got those linemen.
Yeah.
That turned out pretty –
And he doesn't get enough praise for that,
right? Well, I'm
just
saying, that turned out pretty good for the Cowboys.
Yeah, that's right. Now, Willie, tell us this. We've been doing this a lot. We started it with Maurice. Maurice Jones-Drew gave us his dramatic – rainbow of emotions, draft day or draft day's tale, and it really is spellbinding stuff. It starts funny, then you start to feel sad, then it gets funny again, and then it gets sad again, but then he ends up getting drafted and things worked out for him. We've heard this story in an ongoing way, and you talk about chip on the shoulder. Reggie Wayne, he's going to go to the Hall of Fame at some point. He still has a chip on his shoulder. He can reel off for you at the pick and what teams took every receiver in front of him, and he was a first-round guy. He just didn't go high enough for himself by his own standard. Right. It's fascinating. Now, you are the opposite of this. You go four, or did that put a chip on your shoulder? Did you think you belonged even higher?
I didn't know, and all I had to do was just, you know, respect and trust in the process that in the work that I had put in.
Did you go to Radio City Music Hall?
No.
Oh, you're back here.
I wanted to be with my family and friends and have a little party and bring that in. That was a special. I was the first one in my family to go to college. I mean, that was to graduate from USC and be able to do that. I wanted to share all those experiences with my friends. And I damn sure wasn't flying everybody to New York. So that wasn't happening.
Did the NFL Network or ESPN or anybody put a
NFL
camera
Network
in your –
it didn't even exist.
No. Oh, yeah, what am I talking about?
Hey, look,
for
stop.
A decade.
Stop.
Man, it's Willie
O. Hey, they called him on a house phone that actually was connected to something.
It was like,
and it rang. Did you have to go like this?
Was there NBC back then? Did one of those two or three networks put a camera in the house with
Mel Kiper was on TV, so it wasn't that old. Mel Kiper was
Skype's been around.
It goes, so it starts out, the Cincinnati Bungles take Dan Wilkinson. Do you say, you're
Big Daddy.
Big mistake there, Bungles. You should have taken Willie.
Nah.
You don't think that?
Like I said, I never had a conversation. I did think I was going to Dallas. I had a or Cleveland, which Belichick was. Cleveland had the ninth pick, and Cleveland came in and they did a lot of detailed research, and we had a lot of conversations. And I figured I probably would go ninth, or if I didn't go ninth, I didn't know.
Oh, so this is even surprising for you.
Yeah, it was surprising. But
wow. So then, Falk goes two, Heath Shuler goes three.
Then closer
to
the draft, I start having all these conversations with Dallas. Dallas is like, this is what we're doing. We're drafting you. We're gonna trade Alvin Harper to the Rams for that fifth pick, and we're going to take you fifth. So during my party, I had like three or four guys from the Cowboys there, representatives, because they wanted to be there when they drafted me. So – then I was like,
wow, so they have a 55 in a bag somewhere.
So then I was like, I'm going to Dallas. I had the Dallas hat there on the side, all that. I'm like, I'm good. I'm going to Dallas. Fifth pick. They're going to make the trade and all that. Lo and behold, the fourth pick comes and Bill calls. Hey, you ready to be a Patriot? I was like, where's the Patriots?
No, I want to be on America's team.
Where's the Patriots? New England. I got to go
cold.
Out of the country.
Yeah. Like,
I
was like, hey, you better get a winter coat and a 4x4.
I was like, I got to go out of the country and play football. And then that's how it happened.
Is that the – I mean, for real. Is that your real exchange with Bill Belichick? Like, where's New England?
No, I came off – no, it wasn't
across the pond?
It was Bill Parcells.
Oh, it's Parcells.
The other Bill. Remember, you saw the show.
And I was like, where's New – I got to go – New England. And he was like – but I knew who Parcells was because Lawrence Taylor was like one of my favorites. So I just knew him from the Giants, Parcells. I wasn't watching New England football. My team was, you know who I told you, was the Steelers growing up.
I'm going to New England.
Nice.
And when you got there, too, I mean, it's different. Like, the stadium was doo-doo.
The weight room was this size.
It was
oh, is
dungeon.
That right?
Oh, yeah, the weight
but
room.
But you never wore the Pat Patriot get-ups except in a throwback game.
Yeah, throwback.
You when you got there, you had the royal blue weird ones, those weird.
Yeah, the big. The
Bledsoe,
big,
yeah.
Yeah, the big, yeah.
See, you know what's interesting? Like, did you meet Dan Wilkerson? Did you know him coming out?
I know those guys from the Playboy All-American thing that we did. So we all went to Arizona. I think they had moved it from Florida to Arizona. So I met, like, Aaron Glenn, him, a lot of the –
that's what you should be asking about.
A lot of guys.
The Playboy part.
I met all those guys there.
Yeah, you should be asking about that team. See, the difference
is – was it the mansion?
Back then, there was no social media. So, like,
he
didn't know about all those guys. And, like, they weren't all keeping up on them. So it's like you're just
– you heard about them when they were playing, and you had to know about them because that was your competition for me, the defensive guys. Like, I didn't really focus on the offensive guys. I'm like, who am I dealing with? Like, who's the elephant? Who's playing my position? Who are the defensive? And, you know, hands down, Big Daddy was the guy coming out. We knew he'd go before any defensive guy. It was just who after that.
It really is interesting because Wilkinson had an okay career, a little bit up and down.
Yeah, but not college. He was a monster.
No, he definitely was. Yeah, I remember
he was a monster.
At the time that it was clear cut that he was going to go
no
one
question
overall.
About it.
So fourth overall, and do you have that thing where – because people make a big deal about it, but I think we get we're so cynical. We're such vapid skeptics and cynics about everything that happens in the 21st century. I still think that moment, when you watch the kid who's 21 and he's got his mom next to him and he's got the family around him, did you feel in that moment as you're taking the call, hey, you ready to be a New England Patriot? Are you thinking like – I did it. You know, my family's now going to be set. I'm going to be able to take care of everybody. Do you feel that in that moment? Does it hit you?
There's a lot of pressure because everybody wants to get drafted a certain position and go high. And I think all the work that you put in, like I put in a lot of work, you know, and I did a lot to put myself in that position. Didn't know. Like I could have been the 15th pick. Who knows? Or I could have been at the bottom of the first. Who knows? My thing is I just wanted to be able to get out of where I came from, and be one of the guys to make it. There's a lot of history and guys that went through the league at the high school I went to and from Long Beach. So there's a rich tradition of guys. I just wanted to be able to uphold my part and all the other things too, your family and the first to go to college, like all that pressure just kind of like – I just kind of like released. I was just like.
By the way, when did Snoop come into your life? Because is that a coincidence
I've been
that
Snoop since you football? Since
is that you. Why you or he is a Steelers fan, or did you agree on that together?
No, he was.
Because he's Pittsburgh. He wears the Penguin sweater in the first time.
His grandmother, I think his grandmother or his somebody in his family was. And that's how he became a Steelers fan. But he was, you know, youth football. We was known each other from the youth football circuit, and then high school, and then we grew up.
O'Hara, now
the dog father.
McGinnis moves on to the dog pound, and you take over for the New York Football Giants. You're on that line now. Brady and company, they're 18-0. They're unstoppable. Everybody says it's a fait accompli. The Giants are a fine team, but come on, they're not going to beat this team. It's 60 minutes away from history for these Patriots. But you and Eli and Tyree and the rest get together and you scuttle these plans for another celebration in Foxborough and beyond. Tell us about the – and I'm not talking about like, it was a great play. Second by second, you know now who drops the interception just before
Asante Samuels.
Asante Samuels drops that. Now you go to the huddle. Tell me – now walk us through it. Second by second. Willie wasn't even on the team, so you're not going to hurt his feelings.
Oh, I was a fan.
I know, but all right. You made it very clear that you don't ingest that emotion. You've said, I wasn't on the team.
I was bitter.
he was wearing a Giants hat.
I had a cock to the side with the Giants. I was bitter. I was like, sitting.
They're winning without me.
I was sitting in Cleveland like this. Another one.
They better not go undefeated without me. Wait, right. I was the reason we didn't go undefeated. Yeah, see a lot. He had conflicted emotions.
You know, it's funny you bring up Asante Samuel. I don't know if I've ever seen him drop an interception.
That really is true because that was his specialty.
And we literally, I'll never forget Kevin Gilbride coming in to offensive meetings. And it was when he was in New England. It was when he was in Philly. And he said, look, just don't even look over there. We are not going to even throw in his direction. I mean, Asante Samuel was before Sherman and all these corners were battling about who the best corners were. He was a locked guy. You didn't even throw his direction. So the fact that we got away with that one, I mean, there was a number of plays.
Was that the next play?
Was that a sign like things are going to go in our direction?
I mean, looking back on it, yeah, there's all those plays you look back, you're like, man. Like, literally, that play. Ahmad Bradshaw fumbles in exchange with Eli earlier in the game, and somehow he punches the ball out and ends up at the bottom of the scrum getting that ball. Like, there's so many things, even just throughout the season, that led to that. So, yeah, that was, I mean.
I want to hear about
that play, and then.
Okay, so you go to the huddle. Now talk about what's Eli like in this moment. It's 14-10. Seconds are ticking away on a miracle finish for the Giants. What's Eli like in the huddle?
Yeah, he's the same. You know, I mean, that's what's remarkable about him is
why does he command the attention of men? Because he just seems like he's not a super loud guy or real vocal guy. What is it that what's his trick you that know, commands everybody's attention?
It's funny because most of us, we all have guy friends that you know how to get under the skin and you know how to just. I mean, you know, like. It's hard. It's really hard to fluster him. It's hard. I mean, you know, you don't see it in practice. You don't see it in the game. And like he loves that moment. Now, I used to tease him all the time, say, "Hey, I love all these great comebacks, but you don't have to throw three picks in the first half. You know, like you can make it easy on us. We don't have to rally. You know, in the fourth quarter. But he loves that moment. And I think he even said in the huddle, like, "Hey guys, look, everybody do your job. We're gonna go down and win this thing. Like, let's you know." Which was rare for him. He wasn't a big talker. I mean, it was only his fourth year in the league, too. So, you know, that was a big moment. But it's, you know, I think Eli just said, hey, look, I know he knew exactly what he was waiting for. Defensively, they had been pretty vanilla all game long, and they were just waiting for us to make the mistake. And that's how they win a lot of games up in New England. Everybody wants to know what's the science behind this. They're like, you know what, we're not going to beat ourselves. And we're not going to make it easy on you. We're not going to give you anything. So
Willie told me that about 5 years ago, and I hang my hat on that an offensive coordinator and these millionaire quarterbacks with the big egos are not going to be able to resist for 60 minutes trying to jam one in there, even though they shouldn't. Yeah, they've got to try to make the hero play, and that's
what
you guys win.
That was interesting, and I'll bring that back up when he's done with his story about Eli's brother, Peyton, that Reggie Wayne talked about. Like, he didn't want the – Nickel. He wanted the gusto.
Yeah. Well,
like he wanted.
He wants to just put it on him.
Yeah. Right?
He's going all in. I got pocket fours. I'm going all in. Like, yeah. You got a pair, but it's not. I mean,
it was like he just wanted to put his foot on defense's neck.
It's not enough to win. I want to be the hero in
this
victory.
Well, not necessarily that, but he just wanted to leave nothing. You know, like the comebacks. We got all these comebacks, right? Like that. You know, like in the Patriot Atlanta game, you know, 28-5, not enough. We need 40-5, then I'll feel good. You know, just that mentality.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so now you're in the huddle. Eli is feeling confident. You are basking in this reflected confidence.
Was that before the holding or after the holding?
I mean, we weren't. I don't know.
Let's talk about
what play
that.
What player are we on? What player are we on?
We're talking about the big one
now.
I don't know.
I don't know what.
That series.
I don't know what the incompletion.
Spaghetti.
I mean,
look up that
Asante,
drive. When was that play? Spaghetti is swooning behind the glass.
I think that was second down. So what's crazy about that play? And actually, I was breaking it down not too long ago. That play, Steve Smith runs like a wrong route because he's a rookie, and Eli was trying to throw the ball away, but like he was supposed to break hot because they brought the Sam, and he didn't break hot, and Eli was waiting for him to break hot. So he throws that ball, and I think he actually kind of yells at him, like, you know, I won't say it here, but he gets on Steve Smith a little bit because he didn't break hot he and Tyree weren't on the same page, Steve Smith and Tyree, that is. And I think Tyree ran the right route, but Steve Smith just didn't break hot. So that got him a little fired up. You know, coming back in the huddle, I remember, you know, I'm not going to sit here and say we were confident, like, oh, yeah, we got this. Like, I remember I'm sitting there saying to Snee, hey, man, come help. Like, help out. They are kicking. They're teeing off on us. They were literally teeing off on me, Soybert, and Deal, because I had torn my MCL in that Week 17 game, the regular season game. So I missed the second half in that. So I couldn't really my change of direction. I mean, I was gimpy. They knew that. Richie Soybert tore his MCL in the NFC Championship game against Green Bay. So both of us were. I mean, you know, we didn't know if Richie was going to play in the game. And then Deal is playing left tackle, and Adelius Thomas. I mean, they're just teeing off on us. And what they were doing was they were taking Junior Seau, rest his soul, lining him up on Snee, who was our best lineman, and then they were dropping him. So what they were basically saying is they were holding him. They were making him account for Junior Seau, and we were going – we went four down – you know, we had the four down guys and Junior Seau. We were locked on them, and the back was on a scan. So Junior would come up like he was rushing, and then on the snap, he would drop out. So Chris Snee is standing there eating a sandwich, not doing anything, and we're all over there fighting for our lives. You know, and I used to come over, and I'd say, hey, did Junior come? He's like, no, he dropped. I'm like, where were you? Come on. We're getting twists. You know, and I'm in silent count, so I got my head between my legs, and Jarvis Landry is flipping around. So he would start here. I'd put my head down, and he'd go over here.
Jarvis Green.
And I'd come up, Jarvis Green, and I'd come up, and he's not there, so now he's over here. So I'm yelling at my guards. I'm like, hey, you got to talk to me. If he moves, let me know. So I'd come down, and Richie's like, he's on your right, he's on your right. Chris going, he's on your left. You know, and this is all going on. You know, at the line. And sure enough, it was him and Seymour. They were just running nose and twists on us all game long. And, I mean, it was miserable, to be honest with you. Like, they were teeing off on us. So that's what happened on that exact play that Eli broke, the only tackle he's ever
broken. Well, then Eli, yeah, that's the thing I feel like history does not give
you. That was just heart, man. Like, I didn't know how he got out of that either.
It was luck.
Right. He's rolling and running away. Eli Manning's doing that?
Jarvis had him by the jersey, and he kind of just.
He, I think Eli thought he was falling. So, you know, I mean, it's – when you watch it really and you break it down in slow motion, like, Eli thought he was getting sacked, and then all of a sudden he let go of the jersey. Hmm. Now – Seymour and I were kind of my hand just kind of slid up right here, and my instinct was just to squeeze, so I just I had the trachea, and I just was like, squeeze it. I can't believe I'm giving him a sack in the Super Bowl. And then I'm like, oh my gosh, he got free. And then I'm like, oh no. Everybody asked me, what'd you think when Eli threw the ball? I thought I was game over. I thought he threw an interception. It was
why
late. It was,
you don't you throw can see late. What he's looking at.
No, you don't throw late over, throw the over the middle. It was like a Hail Mary.
That's like a rule.
Oh, and he throws it up late, and I'm like, did he just do that? Like, and I'm watching it, and I'm like, oh my gosh, what just happened? I didn't know who had the ball. I'm just running. I know David Tyree and Harrison come down to the ground, and I'm like, let's go. I'm like, we got to run a play because they're going to challenge it. So we're running up, and I think there was a timeout. I think somebody might have called timeout. I can't remember exactly what happened right there, but
Richard Seymour say, "Hey, you're choking me," and you said, "Hey, there's no specific rule in the book that says I can't
Seymour,
choke."
Seymour was talking so much trash that whole game.
What's he say?
Man, he.
There's a lot of stuff.
If it's too blue, then don't say it. But I'm fascinated by the specifics of the trash talk in a big game. Like, I would think you'd be too nervous and too in your own head to be bothering talking to the other guy.
The nervousness is gone now. Like, you're in the moment.
I guess
it's a
so,
game. Yeah. Like, you're in the trenches. It's not like you're on the outside, like the DBs and got the trenches are dirty. Like, there's a lot of dirty things that happen.
Oh yeah,
in the trenches. Like,
and stuff. And what's funny too is like everybody watches the ball.
Right.
So like, hey, you're blocking. The ball goes down there. Refs, everybody's watching where that's going. Nobody's back there watching the elbows and the ball checks. You know, I mean, you just always you're needling each other.
Extracurricular
for 65 plays, it builds up. Yeah,
Bottom line is, first of all, there was no holding on that play, as some people, as haters would have you believe.
Yeah, no,
the Giants didn't hold on that.
There was some squeezing. I call clutching. Like,
now, when you huddle back up, is Tyree in the huddle again? Is he there? And do you say, what did you just do? And he says, I can't believe I caught that ball. Do you have that kind of an exchange with him on the field?
There's not that much time. Do you realize how, like...
No, I know. I can't imagine.
There are conversations.
Hey, let's just stop. Stop. Let's just talk about that play.
Hey, man.
It doesn't happen.
Did you catch it? Did you see it?
It doesn't happen like that.
I don't know. Tweet your buddy. Let's see what happened. Like, no. Honestly, I didn't even see the catch until 4 in the morning. I finally get back to my room at 4 a.m. after some Heinekens, and we're partying at the hotel. And I turn on ESPN, and I see the play, and I'm like, holy freaking bleepity bleep. He pinned it against his helmet.
So you guys don't know in the moment
texting.
Like, that is one of the all-time freakiest plays in pro sports history.
Didn't know it. Didn't know until I saw the replay. And I don't even think Tyree knew that he had pinned it.
And then Plexico shames who in the end zone? He just whipped him.
Hobbs.
That's what I read. Right. Ellis Hobbs. He whips him in the end zone. So you go ahead. Game feels over. But then one more thing. Willie, are you out on this? Like, well, I can't believe we're going to lose. Or did you think, if anybody can do it, it's Brady. And he almost did it. Not we. Yeah, them.
I wasn't there. I was watching.
You just said.
I was in a sports bar.
Oh, yeah,
I was
you're
watching.
Cheering.
He was wearing
Giants. Yeah, Giants. Get them. Teach them what they're missing.
I had an NY hat.
55 would have made sure that this game wasn't even close.
I did say that.
Born a little out.
I did say if I was Jarvis, I would have got that sack.
Got pressure.
Eli would have got away. I'm like, I teased Jarvis about that. Like, dude, how did you let him go? It's Eli. That's a sack. Game winner. Walk off. Like, you're the man. Like,
you've done it before?
Yeah.
Like, postseason sack leader.
What's going on?
He wouldn't let him out of his grasp.
When I saw that happen, I was like, it's not going to end well.
Yeah. Well, O'Hara, the one thing that does happen, Brady uncorks.
Vrabel, too.
Vrabel had a shot?
Vrabel didn't have a shot on that play, but.
Yeah, Vrabel wasn't even, he was caught up in that clutter. It was a big clutter on that, was the left side? It was a big clutter of guys, fighting and scratching.
It was Jarvis, it was
Seymour,
and then I think Adelius.
Okay.
Was Adelius?
Was he in the game? I don't remember him, but I do know it was a big clutter of guys. Like, it was just a bunch of scrapping and fighting.
Mayhem.
Yeah. Okay, so, and then, but Brady then throws probably about 65, 70 yards in the air. He throws it with all his might.
Yeah.
And Randy Moss almost gets it. Are you aware of that happening on the field, or has the celebration begun?
Actually, there's cool video of it. We were sitting on the
I've actually
bench.
Seen you watching
we're
it.
We're like, we gave him too much time. And then he launches that deep ball. And I think Corey Webster got like his pinky on it. And I mean, that was just enough to knock the ball away. But no, when he unleashed that ball, I thought, oh my gosh, like, we're going to lose this game now. Like,
now, that would have
really,
been the weirdest.
It wasn't until Jay Alford sacked Brady that we all realized that it was happening.
All right, let's wrap it up here. What a great time once again. You guys did it. I challenged you to outperform Wayne and Jones, and you did it. Is that fair?
We didn't hit any of his topics.
So what? Don't worry about
what
I hit.
Why do you have a rundown? He didn't hit, I don't think he hit it.
Because I'm from the land of Roethlisberger.
We didn't talk about
I
the
improvise,
color,
man.
Color rush jerseys? We didn't get –
You want a bore? You want boring game planning? Draft Brady. Damashek runs around.
For sure.
Damashek improvises the whole thing. You know, that's what you want. It's exciting.
I see you stepping your game up.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. Hey, real quick here. What?
By the way, I just want to. I'm just noticing that he doesn't have your jersey.
Well, Willie's well on his way. Willie's been an outstanding performer in 2018.
You got to earn it.
I guess
you got to earn it.
You don't just get your jersey up there. You got to earn it. But let me just tell you.
So how did they get up there? Because I see some ones on there that are questionable.
These are past favorite football playing guests.
So what are we? we're not favorite past guests?
It's April. You can't win it in April,
man. This is all from this year?
No, this is the history of the DDFP, man.
I was on last year a lot.
Okay. No, you were only on come December.
Ross Tucker's on there. That's Ross Tucker. Is that Ross Tucker?
Yeah.
There it is, Ross Tucker.
Calais Campbell's up there. Malcolm Jenkins, A.J. Hawk, Maurice Jones-Drew. You know what? McGinnis has been an outstanding performer.
I mean, Willie should be on there. I mean.
I'll handle it. I'll take care of things. I'll see how it happens.
This doesn't have anything to do with the team I played for, does it?
No, yeah, we'll put that. Well, I look forward to the day that your Brown 55 hangs up on the.
Okay,
that'll be nice.
That works too.
Two Browns, and we'll put O'Hara's up there, but his Brown jersey will have some mustard spread on.
I think 60 is going to be retired soon because I think Otto Graham wore that number too, so it might go. I might get my jersey retired. It might be in the state.
You're gonna show up,
son. Hey, son, that's Daddy's jersey right there. Yeah,
that's great.
You're gonna show up to the ceremony.
No, they call me Big O, Otto.
Imagine the equipment guys. Like, oh, I'm here. I heard they're you're retiring 60 today. Yeah. They would be sheepish towing the.
I'm
mud.
Showing up.
You should do that real quick. It's Grilled Cheese Day. What's the best kind of cheese? O'Hara, I start with you.
Ooh, you know what? The best grilled cheese I ever had was
not grilled cheese. I'm just opening it up.
Oh, the
to
best
all cheese.
Cheese?
Yeah. What's your favorite cheese?
Man, I love the Parmesan Reggiano, like the chunks.
Nice.
You know, when you go to a nice Italian
restaurant.
New York.
I was gonna say that's New York.
I'll dominate that. Like, give me one for me and then one for the rest
of the team. I take, you know, people shave it down or whatever. Yeah. I just pick up the whole block. I take a bite of it.
Yeah, no, that's, yeah. that's what you're supposed to
do. That means you love it.
Yeah.
And I love it the same way.
That, and then my wife makes this other kind of cheese. I'm trying, like, it's called Nebbiolo. It's, and then she puts honey on it.
Huh.
And it serves it like kind of like room temperature. It's, wow. it's like gooey. Like, it's
that's
phenomenal.
Cheese yeah, connoisseurs.
Yeah, I'm big on the – I love the appetizers.
I like the hood cheeses, like the cheddar cheese. Just put on just hood cheddar cheese. Why is that talking about a grilled cheese or a pepper jack cheese, you know, just straight out of Ralph's, you know, the little square box.
I thought the hood
He's
was –
He's a box. Simple man.
I thought
see?
It was nacho cheese.
I don't like the gooey unless I'm eating, like, nachos or something with it.
Hey, one other thing.
Hey, that's nacho cheese.
Our friend Willie McGinnis is sort of the mountain to Deeker's Circe because she makes she makes pie,
did
but she's the villain of the pie off.
Huh?
We don't need you to.
We'll
do
off.
It. We'll do we're the pie off again.
Well, there's a two, a
I know,
two
we're
person
do it.
Pie off,
yes,
right?
Yes, we're going to do it.
Oh, yes, I remember.
Her pie is amazing.
All right, there are other people who make good pie, too.
I didn't. I only had one slice.
All right,
of
but
pie.
You advocate for that like you know that what the other ones were.
I wasn't the only one.
I normally don't judge, but when it comes to pies, I'll judge.
But Deeker, all of a sudden, you know, little 4'10" Deeker loves to talk stuff as long as the mountain, Willie McGinnis, is standing behind her like Cersei in Game of Thrones.
She got a lot of supporters.
She recently, as if she doesn't
she's
do
more
enough
of an
things.
She's more of an Arya if you're really going to
I guess, yeah, you might be right, Cersei. But either way, she recently stated that The Godfather is overrated. This is an opinion that Cole Wright also.
The movie?
Yes. That the what's the best gangster movie, Willie McGinnis?
Oh, no. That's one of my top.
One of the top. What's number
one? Top. Scarface.
Scarface 1. Scarface. Over Godfather?
Oh, I'm just saying. You said my favorite.
Your favorite,
right. Scarface.
All right. I'm still allowed to debate you on it.
And then I watched Godfather later. I watched Casino. I watched Goodfellas.
Goodfellas is one of my favorites.
Yeah, there's like that group right there. You could just give me that group and I could stop there.
Goodfellas is really good. Casino is phenomenal.
It is good.
That one is – I mean, if it's on, I cannot watch it.
But it's crazy to say The Godfather.
Like, The Godfather is really good, but, like, it's
– It's like how – it took it
it's,
back.
It's still, like, it's to me, history. It's a different generation of the gangster movie, you know, like that one.
That's right,
like,
yeah, old
like
school.
Like that and Carlito's Way and, you know, I mean, Scarface. Like, those are kind of a little different, the Tony Montanas. And then you've kind of got the Goodfellas, the Bronx Tale.
I like American
Casino.
Gangster. I thought that was a
American
good
Gangster
one
was really good.
See, there's different ones. Just depending when you're watching them, you know.
Well,
Capone. I watched the one on Capone. What's the one?
People forget the Untouchables. That's
Untouchables.
A good gangster
that one.
Movie.
Yeah. That one was so good. Like, that was one of my.
What about The Departed?
I like The Departed.
Yeah, that was
too
good.
Much cell phones.
That was really good.
Too confusing with the cell phones. But hey, I think we covered it all. I think the highlight of this show was when I pointed out that three Elis played in the same game. That was a fascinating detail that you don't get anywhere else. But I think Willie and Sean were interesting themselves. Is that
I'm
true?
Actually just disappointed that you didn't ask me about my draft day.
He just glossed over that.
Yeah, I mean,
that's going to take us quite some time to
go through
30 minutes
the seven
rounds
was
of you
drafted.
Not getting.
And were you upset you went fourth overall? Really? No.
Well, we've heard a lot of people.
Some
tell
guys
us the
didn't
story
even get drafted, so of course, you know. I mean, I would.
That when we come back awesome and we do the and we call. Do the 60 focused podcast right in front of your induction.
It doesn't
the big O.
That. It's just
the big O.
Big O. When my jersey goes up in the rafters and the dog.
Then he's going to want to call you and want to have you talk about your draft experience.
Yeah, hey, MVP. You know what? We usually do wait to do it, but I think that they've earned it with their performance today. Put them. Can we get them both put to the digital wall of fame? But I insist that mustard is on O'Hara's jersey.
100%.
And I want the yellow kind too. Not,
all right.
Not the
so,
good
so you're going to put us up in Browns jerseys.
Browns jerseys, yellow right. Mustard on your jersey.
Perfect. Done.
Yellow and brown. That's going to go well.
Yeah. Look like the 60s Broncos. Sure. Remember when they wore the vertical stripes on?
No, I wasn't born then.
All right. Hey, listen, it was a gay time, and Spaghetti loved it because he's a Giants fan, as you know, right? Spaghetti, was this a good show?
I was sitting like this as Sean was going through, like, second by set, frame by frame of that.
How old were you for that?
2007, I was 15. Ugh. I was in high school, and I remember crying pre-catch. I was like, I cannot go to school if they lose. I'm like, I cannot go see people if they lose this game.
Wow.
And – And I remember that play. I just could. I mean, that whole run of like the Bucks, the Cowboys, the Packers, like, yeah. Like that was just
that
07
Packers
was
game
so good.
Is aesthetically for somebody who loves uniforms and weather and being the game being in the weather. That looked on TV like it could have been 1959. Like it with the freezing and the uniforms and the big billows of smoke and everything. Of your breath in the overtime and everything.
It wasn't that fun.
No. Tom Coughlin's still red-faced.
Most uncomfortable I've ever been in a game. That one hurt. At one point, I really didn't care if we won or lost. I just wanted to get that.
Is that true?
Yeah. I had frostbite on my finger in that game. It still bothers me.
You know Steve
we won. So it's
Mariucci's trick, he told me, was when he was the QB coach at halftime, they would have the quarterback meeting in the sauna. That was his special.
Yeah, that's good while you're inside, but once you go back outside.
What he said was actually sweat, and then you'd go outside, and then the sweat would freeze, right. And it actually was detrimental.
Did Mooch take credit for that, or was that Brett trying to sweat it out?
I got you. All right, listen, the great Willie McGinnis, the great Sean O'Hara, watch him on Total Access with the great Dan Helly and Lindsey Rhodes or whoever's hosting it right now. Thanks for coming in, fellas. We appreciate it. Wonderful times. Yep.
Where's the food?
All right, there's no food this time.
What?
Not every time we don't lay out food for you. We got to get another food block going, though. Think of a good one.
I was
we'll
told
do.
There'd be food.
All right, listen, we'll wrap it up here. We'll be back next week, the week before the draft. Then we head off to Dallas, Texas. You fellas going to be down there?
Yep.
We'll be here.
Oh, you'll be here?
Right. Yeah.
I'll be there.
Very good.
He's going to be down there.
Sending the first
tell
team.
Him, you were going to draft me. 30 years ago.
It was me.
Where's O'Hare? It's draft week. He's in stall 3 in the wiener. Hey, we'll talk to you next week. It's been a thin slice of heaven.
Again.